going to be late. We're not going to get what we want to eat for dinner. Things are hard. Like, life is hard. Yeah. And when we're regularly having like full on fight flight reactions to just sort of, you know, regular moments of life, it's very, very taxing on our nervous system. And then of course it's hard for our relationships. So I try to approach it from that perspective, as opposed to how do I get this kid to change their behavior, or how do I get this parent to change?
You're listening to episode 84 of the Play Therapy Community Podcast.
Welcome to Play Therapy Community Podcast, providing connection, information, and inspiration to child therapists all around the world. Here's your host, a licensed psychotherapist, a registered play therapist, and my mom, Jackie Flynn.
This episode is brought to you by the World Association of Sand Therapy Professionals. WASTP was created to support the integrity and ethical practice of sand therapy and to support greater access to sand therapy training throughout the world. It honors the use of sand therapy from a diverse variety of clinical theoretical orientations. You can learn more about the World Association of Sand Therapy Professionals at www.worldsandtherapy.com. Hi there. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Play Therapy Community Podcast. Well, I love meeting with you like this. At the time of this recording, it's early June. I'm packing up my bags to go to Mid-Atlantic Play Therapy Conference. It's in Washington, D.C. and Arlington, Virginia, and it's going to be amazing. I'm excited to see so many people that's in our play therapy community. We'll be there learning. I get to present on Sunday. Dora's presenting. I get to see Ann and Annie and, oh, Marshall, all of the people that, not all of them, but a lot of the people that I really admire and that I don't get to see often, I'm going to get to see this weekend. Oh, and I get to see Joy Newman and Carol Kranowitz. They're the authors of the Instinct Child book. So I'm really excited. I've been packing my bags. It's beautiful weather here in Florida. It is getting a little bit on the warm side. I rode my bike around the block and the sun's coming out. Shorts, t-shirt, flip-flops. It's nice. But I heard in D.C. that the weather is just gorgeous. So there's that. I'm excited. I feel so lucky. All right. Today, I want to share a conversation that I had with Robin Goebel. Robin Goebel is a huge resource in our play therapy community. She really knows her stuff when it comes to trauma. She's someone that we look to for information and understanding to help our traumatized clients and their families. But she's also someone that has lots of resources for parents. She's up there in Michigan. She's a certified EMDR therapist. She's a certified therapist with foster and adoptive children and families. She's a Circle of Security parent educator. She's just a really good person to have like as a resource so that we can better help our clients. Because when we're helping our clients that have been traumatized, really makes a difference to have some good solid information and some resources and all of that good stuff. Okay, so without further ado, here's my conversation with Robin Goebel. Hi, Robin. Thank you so much for being on the Play Therapy Community Podcast. You know, I'm a huge fan of yours. The first time that I met you was after hearing about you through Marshall Lyles. And I just recently went to a training of his and he had one of your big slides up on the screen there in front of us, teaching us all about your trauma knowledge. And I know you have a lot of great resources out there. So I am super excited about today's conversation. But before we get started, let me have you just tell people who you are and what you do.
I'd love to. Thanks for having me, Jackie. I mean, feelings are totally mutual. You do so much out in the world for therapists who are just wanting so much to like show up in a way that they're, you know, doing their best work with kids and families. And so it's really fun to just watch all that you do to support those people. So the feeling is totally mutual. Thanks for having me. Yeah. So I have been a therapist my entire adult life and have always worked primarily with kids and families, kids who, what I would call now, who have experienced complex trauma. That's not what we really were calling it when we, when we first started doing this work. Kids who have experienced complex trauma have vulnerable nervous systems, often are in adoptive families. And I now really focus my work on teaching and training and educating both parents. And so I really still like to be like in the trenches with the families who are doing this just hard, hard, hard job every day. And also I, like you, teach and train professionals who are looking to really feel more confident in their work with families of kids with like these biggest, most baffling behaviors.
Yeah. And when you say in the trenches, oh my gosh, girl, one of my clients' parents sent me one of your emails, forwarded it to me. It's like, have you heard of this person? Look at this. And I was like, yes, I know her. I feel like
that's fun.
Like Elf. Like, oh, I know him. Santa, I know him.
That's so fun. I mean, that's such, I mean, really the thing I'm just loving about things right now is, you know, technology has given us this opportunity to impact and reach people in pretty profound, remarkable ways. You know, to think that like an email impacts somebody in a way that they're excited to like forward it on to somebody, or my podcast, or, you know, or the club, the membership community I have. I mean, there's just like these amazing ways to impact people all over the world. That's just, I don't know. I still wake up every day and I'm like, how is this even possible?
Crazy, isn't it?
Yes. And
so much to where you don't even know the impact.
Right.
No, like, and gosh, I'm jumping around in my head. It's like a ping pong ball game in there. I'm thinking about like all the cool stuff you do. You incorporate a lot of movement. You incorporate a lot of polyvagal theory stuff with the embodiment. So one thing that I want to focus on in today's conversation is parenting is hard.
Yes.
It is. I'm a parent myself, but many of the people that we work with as clinicians, they are parenting in situations where there's trauma, and they may have experienced trauma themselves. So things can get exponentially hard. So I'd like to really kind of define what trauma is and how does it impact parenting?
There are, it feels like there's like infinite definitions of trauma. Like there's so many, everybody has thoughts and opinions about, you know, what trauma means. And when I think about that word, specifically to how that impacts like the work that I do and the families that I'm working with, I really just think about trauma as experiences that overwhelm the stress response system and then leads to like a vulnerability in that stress response system in the future. So it can be, you know, some people experience, you know, significant impacts on their stress response system in like one significant traumatic experience. And for other folks, of course, it looks a little different. Like there's kind of chronic traumatic experiences that can occur over, you know, pretty lengthy period of time. For me, it's less about the specific, like, what happened and more about how has it impacted that stress response system. And yeah, just like you said, you know, I've spent so much time focusing on what does that mean for kids and then supporting their families. But without question, what I've found, and I'm sure your listeners are seeing this as well, is that oftentimes we get kids and families come into our services and it's the child that we're identifying as having these, you know, traumatic experiences. And as we start to really work with families, we realize that parents also have pretty stressed out, sensitized, or vulnerable nervous systems as well. And sometimes that's due to the child the experiences that that they've had parenting this specific child, mm-hmm. that those experiences have been so overwhelming. And then sometimes it's, of course, experiences that parents had prior to ever parenting, right? From their own childhood experiences. But yeah, when it comes right down to it, I'm really thinking about how, you know, these traumatic experiences have now left this child and their family with this sensitized stress response system, this vulnerable nervous system, which really just means that they're demonstrating behaviors that are really disproportionate to the amount of stress that they're under, right? Like we're seeing kids who are flipping over the dinner table because what was served isn't their favorite thing, or they're yeah. you know, punching a teacher because the math questions are too hard. And when we get right down to it, it is stressful to like have to have dinner that isn't what you want. And it is stressful to have to like do math that you don't feel competent at. Like these are legitimate stressors. But what's happening is that really vulnerable nervous system, that really sensitized stress response system, is leaving the child and the parent too, right? In a place where these teeny tiny little stressors, things that we would say are teeny tiny, are leading to this very enormous stress response. Mm-hmm. So that's really what I'm thinking about, is what has contributed to the sensitized stress response system, and how do we grow the resilience in that stress response system so that the response to the stress feels a little bit more proportionate to the actual size of the stress.
Oh, so good. Oh, I love how you explain it in like regular language to where it doesn't sound all complicated. So a couple of things. It reminds me of my friend Sandra. She has this saying, it's like they were having a dollar reaction for a nickel infraction.
Oh, like, that's great. You know, Marshall, you mentioned Marshall Lyles. Yeah. I heard from him like probably a decade ago, and I still use this when I teach. He's always said it's like having a $5 reaction to a 50 cent problem. So yeah, totally the same thing. I love that.
Yeah. Out of proportion. When you think that they would react this big, it's like way bigger. Mm-hmm. As you know, here I am making hand movements knowing this is audio.
Right. Right. But we see those behaviors as, you know, we give all sorts of behaviors to those, like all sorts of labels to those behaviors. We've got all sorts of creative ways to label them. But when it comes right down to it, it's really just a disproportionate stress response behavior. And when we look at it through that lens, a couple things happen. One, I feel a lot more like compassionate about that.
Yes.
And that helps me feel better. But also I get a lot better ideas about like, what do I actually do to solve this problem?
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Just even hearing you say that, it takes it from kind of something that's defective to something has adapted out of a pain point.
Absolutely. Yep.
That adaptation. It makes me think of that book. Oh my goodness. I love that book with Dr. Bruce Perry and Oprah Winfrey, where what happened to you? Really that source, what happened? And then how did your nervous system respond to that? I know years ago, my goodness, I was late for a session. I forget what happened. And my client was very dysregulated. And I remember thinking, whoa, so sometimes people are going to be late. I wonder why he's so upset over this. And then, so when we met and we really processed through it, if you traced back her history, there was this origin of sitting and waiting for a parent to come pick her up from school that was always late. So it had a history behind it, and it was very dysregulating. So for me, being late didn't seem like a big deal. I was like, sometimes things happen and people are late. But I think, you know, what you're describing is what's regulating or dysregulating to one may not be a big deal to another.
Yeah. I mean, if we really get into the science and we understand what's really happening, we can see and we land on the conclusion that the behavior always matches, right? Yeah. It can feel like it doesn't. It's like, oh my gosh, this is a huge this is such a huge overreaction. But if we really understood what was happening in that person's neurobiology, yes. Based on, you know, what was happening right now, but also all their past experiences and what yeah. they learned in the past and how that's, you know, sensitized their nervous system. And we put all those things together. What we really see is like, oh, actually, it's easy for me to call this an overreaction, but actually the reaction makes perfect sense. It completely matches the state of their own like neurophysiology. And it really is hard on their system to be reacting in such like enormous, profound ways to what we would call kind of like everyday stressors, right? Like that's so hard on the body.
Yeah.
So I really try to approach it from that perspective. Like not so much how do we change this person's behavior, but like, how do we help their nervous system be like rest more? Because having such a profound stress response system to regular stressors, because life is very stressful. And just like you said, people are going to be late. We're not going to get what we want to eat for dinner. Things are hard. Like life is hard. Mm-hmm. And when we're regularly having like full on fight flight reactions to just sort of, you know, regular moments of life, it's very, very taxing on our nervous system. And then of course it's hard for our relationships. So I try to approach it from that perspective, as opposed to how do I get this kid to change their behavior, or how do I get this parent to change their behavior?
Ah, seeing what the source is. Yeah. Oh my goodness. As you're saying that, I'm thinking about like how it's hard on the nervous system, kind of like running a car uphill in first gear, like eventually it's going to get worn out.
Yeah,
now, exactly. Over time, since I found out about your membership site, I've pointed a lot of my parents, you know, my clients' parents towards your membership site. And I know you offer a lot of resources for parents, like a sense of community, but also yep. A lot of information. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and how you help?
Yeah. So I do, I have a, what feels like a pretty clear kind of Venn diagram model at this point. I mean, it's always evolving and changing, but the way that I approach supporting parents at this point is I'm always thinking about these three core pieces and how they fit together. And one is I spend a lot of time teaching parents how to become their child's own expert. And so really dysregulated parents are asking, you know, like, just tell me what to do. How do I stop my kid's behavior? And that's, I get that. That's a great question. Yeah. And when parents ask me that question, what I usually, you know, how I process that question is, this parent is so stressed out right now that they need that much co-regulation. They need somebody else to come in and just tell them what to do. Mm. And it's also true that as that parent becomes more regulated, it's actually so much better for them if they don't stay focused on the just tell me what to do, and instead start to learn about their child's brain and nervous system and what's really driving that behavior. So I spend a lot of time teaching parents in a very digestible and accessible way, like what behavior really is, like what's the neurobiology of behavior. I want it to make sense for them. I want it to be useful in their real life and not just a bunch of like psychobabble, like mumbo jumbo that they like just goes over their head. But I think we hear parents say so often things like, well, this professional told me to do this, and this professional told me to do this, and this person told me to label feelings, but now this person is telling me that label feelings is too intrusive, is it's going to make my child more dysregulated. And they land in this very righteous place of confusion. And then they lose trust in themselves and in their professionals. So I really work to, you know, one, help a parent get to the place in their own physiology that they can be regulated enough, mm-hmm. that they can learn what the real problem is, instead of just staying stuck in like the tool game of whack-a-mole. I kind of think about like you give parents all these tools and they're just playing, they're just using them in this like whack-a-mole kind of way, right? Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't, but ultimately whack-a-mole is not fun. It's very frustrating, right?
Yeah. And how helpful could that be, like when you're in a state of distress and somebody's just desperately throwing out different techniques and interventions that You don't right. feel that connection and that felt. You mentioned right. the word co-regulation. That may be a new term to some of our listeners. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so regulation itself is, and the word, the way that I use the word regulation is all about having balance and flexibility inside our autonomic nervous system, which is just fancy words for the part of our body that's like fueling our behaviors, right? Like it's giving us the energy that's underneath behaviors. Yeah. And sometimes it feels like, well, why is that important? But really, if we stop and think about the kinds of behaviors that kids and their parents are having that are stressing us out, there's usually a mismatch in like the energy that's underneath that behavior and yes. the amount of energy that's really needed in that moment. So regulation is about the energy and arousal and having balance in that, and is, you know, in the long game, such a huge thing of what we're supporting kids with is how does their nervous system become more regulated? And the path towards regulation is receiving co-regulation, which means the back and forth kind of serve and return of regulation between two people. So kids receive co-regulation from oftentimes from a caregiver or from a parent who's really providing externally from themselves or from the environment mm-hmm. ways to help that child stay more regulated or come into regulation.
Girl, I love the way you describe that. So they're not doing it by themselves. They're not expecting right. to just kind of pull it back online and everybody's right. having an experience. Boy.
Right. But then just like you said, I used the word co-regulation a couple moments ago in speaking about parents. Yeah. So I take the same theory that I play with the kids and I apply it to the parents and I apply it to myself as well. Yeah. And so when I'm working with a parent who's, you know, really stressed out, really focused on just tell me what to do, or really is just, you know, really preoccupied with how do I change this behavior? I need to get it to stop. I'm thinking about how this parent needs co-regulation. Yeah. And that in this moment, that's my number one job is how do I help this parent move back into regulation themselves so that their nervous system feels safe. And they can start to get more curious about what's really driving their kids' behavior and less focused on just how do I make it stop?
Oh, that's so good. So you're not like hyper-focused on do this or do that, just really helping that parent feel felt, understood, and connected within themselves and you enough to kind of regulate and be that external or the co-regulator with their kid. Oh, that's so good.
Now, yeah, so I kind of want to do all, like I want to help them, you know, I teach them the neurobiology of behavior and then I help them understand like regulation for themselves and why that's important. So like, those are like the, like two of the pillars, but then I do teach a ton of tools. I just really teach them in with clarity that's like, hey, y'all, these are just some ideas based on what I understand about the nervous system and what helps with regulation and connection and felt safety. And so my goal really is to like kind of stuff the toolbox yeah. and then really increase parents' confidence and regulation so that instead, you know, like they can stop playing behavior whack-a-mole. They can stop always relying on a professional to tell them what to do simply because it's not always right. Like the professionals aren't the ones who really truly know their kids. And we all know that we constantly get contradicting advice from professionals. And so that's what I found true. To kind of like be that magic combination is like, I want to teach the neurobiology of behavior. I want to help parents get to know themselves and stay as regulated themselves as possible. And then I do want to, of course, give them a ton of tools. So that's the way, like that's the stuff that I do, like the things that I'm doing. But I think what's really more unique about what I'm doing is how I do it. And which is that I'm doing it not just through community, because I have this membership community that brings in parents of kids with big baffling behaviors and professionals too. Professionals, you know, a lot of, a lot of professionals wear both hats, right? They're parenting kids with pretty tough behaviors, and they're also professionals, but I welcome just professionals too, who just want to learn more. Mm-hmm. But I really have discovered that I think the unique thing that I do is more about the way that this is done, which is not just through community, but through a community that's very intentionally focused on us as the adults giving and receiving connection and co-regulation inside the community. And so we approach each other with the same values that we want to approach our kids with. So like some of our group manifesto or things like regulated, connected kids who feel safe, do well, but also regulated and connected parents who feel safe are parenting the way they want to. And in accordance with their like values that they have. So what that means is real in real life is when people show up to the community and they're talking about their kids in ways, or they're telling us about ways they've behaved with their kids that really don't fit in with the way that we strive to parent in the community.
Yeah.
We aren't judging those parents. We aren't criticizing them. We recognize they're dysregulated. Mm-hmm. So we stay focused on creating safety and co-regulation and like welcoming them, like tell us all the hard stuff. Ooh. And we work really hard to help parents feel super seen and not judged. And through that experience, a couple amazing things are happening. One is like their brain is changing to the point where then they will parent with more connection and co-regulation, right? But they get more regulated through the co-regulation of the group. And then I just watch parents kind of find the answers in themselves more, right? That they can take the tools that they've learned and be like, oh, well, I could do this, or next time I'll do that. And the group members are so fiercely committed to the values of compassion that's probably my favorite part, like to watch these members show up in a way and lead with compassion instead of judgment or even just advice, right? But they are always leading with, that sounds so hard. I really hear how hard that is for you, or I really see you. And it can feel like, well, how is that helpful? But Jackie, you and I know like that's the most helpful thing ever, right?
Yeah, that's more important than the actual do this. It's
absolutely. It's really quite magical. It's just been such a profound experience to help kind of create. And then like, I feel like I've created the structure for it. And then the parents show up and they just do the magic. It's amazing.
When you were describing that, I like literally felt tingles in my body thinking about what it must be like to be a parent that's really, really in difficult situations that sometimes can lend itself to a lot of, you've done this wrong, especially if there's like calls to the authorities and stuff.
Exactly.
Like they're finally reaching out, making themselves vulnerable. And then there's somebody like, oh, I see you. I see this is hard. Gosh, Robin, it makes me think about like Dr. Siegel's connect and redirect, like connecting in a way like a humanity, like, or nervous system to nervous system, heart to heart, soul to soul. Yeah. We're in this together. And then once you can co-regulate, then let's look at some ways that may be able to help.
And exactly. Then
the tools part.
Exactly. That's kind of why I say like my model per se isn't all that like super unique. Like I'm really good at integrating information across disciplines, right? So I'm pulling in like the neurosequential model and polyvagal theory and interpersonal neurobiology and memory processing theory and on and on and on. Like I really enjoy integrating.
You've got a lot of knowledge.
right. And, what I teach in and of itself isn't that unique. What I think is a little bit more unique is how, right? That it's done in community. Mm-hmm. And it's done in a container that sort of creates felt safety implicitly. And then we trust in that. Like we trust in the connection and the safety and the boundaries, because it's not just a like all behavior goes space by any stretch of the imagination, right? I like to say like all parts of you are welcome, but not all behavior is welcome, right? Like have to, you know, still hold each other like to pretty high standards of behavior with very clear, compassionate boundaries. And as parents experience that, mm-hmm. how that changes their brain and their nervous system, and not only impacts them just as humans, of course, but then that is what's really making the most profound shift in how they parent their kids. Now, those of us who are therapists are like, well, yeah, that's basically what we do in therapy. Yeah, that's what I did as a therapist too, forever and ever and ever and ever. What I wanted to get curious about was, can I do that with more people? And can I reach people whose therapy is not accessible? Like, yeah. like when, especially, you know, when I moved away from Austin, which is a place where you like, there's more therapists than everything. Like,
oh, that place is beautiful too. I just went there.
I know. I loved Austin. It was a great place to be a therapist. And there's a lot of therapists. And even in Austin, it's hard to get a therapist because there's still just not enough. But when you move away from like a big metropolitan area like that, that's very focused on things like health and wellness, you know, what I saw was like, oh my gosh, like therapy's not accessible at all. Therapy's not accessible to the people who really, really need the most support. It's not accessible because there's not enough therapists. It's not accessible because it costs too much. It's not accessible because they don't have the job flexibility to be able to go to a weekly appointment. And frankly, it's just not even what they need. Like yeah. people need other things than 1 hour a week with a therapist. Yeah. And so that was what got my wheels turning, was like, how can I offer this experience to families in the way that I was doing it in this one-on-one therapy setting, but in a way that breaks barriers down for the people who honestly therapy is just not an option for them. So definitely what we're doing isn't therapy, right? I'm not treating people's mental health conditions inside this membership, but you know, when we look at like, well, what really makes therapy therapy? Like what's the magic of therapy? And I feel really clear that like therapists sort of like, they don't own the patent on, you know, like providing felt safety, providing connection, providing co-regulation. Yeah. We can do that in so many formats that aren't therapy.
Yeah.
And sometimes just that's what people need.
Therapy or having a really close relationship or being part of a membership community. Yeah. Where you have like social engagement and friends that care, and just a whole slew of like tools to pull from as you can apply them and need them.
Yeah. And it's titrated. Like you can access it when you want to, right? So like when you're feeling like, oh, I'm so stressed, I need some support, you can go to it then and not wait for your appointment that's happening in 4 days. Or if you're feeling like it's too much right now, I don't even want to engage, then you don't. You don't have to go simply because it's your appointment time. And so that part feels, parents will say that that's really important too, that it puts the power totally in their court for like when they receive. And Dr. Perry talks about that the importance of that too, like the titration moments of healing is what Dr. Perry talks about.
Yeah. In that book, he talked about like even spending like 15 minutes, 10 minutes with a child to build up that trust. Oh, this is so good. Okay, so we only have just literally like a couple minutes, but I want to make sure people know where to go to learn more from you and use any of the resources that you have, whether for themselves, whether for like a referral. What do you have and how do we get it?
I have a lot of free resources. That was the gift of the pandemic, right? It was like, I could create a bunch of stuff and give it away for free. So if we're going to find a gift, that's what I found. So at Robin, over on my website, which is just robingoble.com, there's a free resources page. So robingoble.com/free resources has, I have a couple different eBooks. A couple different like just kind of intro video series. And that's a great place for both parents and professionals to get some really tangible resources. And then I have a podcast. It's called Parenting After Trauma. So it's in all the podcast players. You can find it. It's definitely, I speak to parents in the podcast, but I know that probably half of my audience is professionals, right, who are learning how to support parents.
Yes.
So that's just, again, Parenting After Trauma, any podcast app or at robingoble.com/podcast. And then, yeah, you talked about my membership. It's called The Club. That's at robingoble.com/theclub. And then I do have a more formal training program for professionals. It's this immersive year-long program for professionals who want to feel more confident and have more regulation themselves in doing this really hard work with families. And that program's called Being With. So that's, of course, at robingoble.com/beingwith.
Oh, so good. One of the gazillion things that I love about you is your capacity to be able to take all of this complex stuff and translate it into everyday language so we can not only understand it better ourselves, but to be able to communicate it to clients in a way that when they understand it, then it's actionable and then change can happen.
Yes.
Healing.
Yes.
Well, Robin, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast like this. And I'm amazed at all the gifts that you've put out into this world. That's so beautiful.
Well, you too, Jackie. We have kind of similar ways that we work in the world with how we love to teach and train. And so grateful for you and everything that you're doing as well. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, anytime. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Play Therapy Community Podcast. For more resources, feel free to visit www.playtherapycommunity.com. All right, take care. Bye now.